This is The Other 51. I'm Brian, and this week my guest is Grammy and Juno award-winning musician Tanya Elizabeth. My guest this week is a Grammy and Juno award-winning musician. She is the fiddle player for my favorite band, the Avett Brothers, and is a songwriter who has been working on an album in the past year. So we're very glad to have Tanya Elizabeth joining us this week. Welcome to The Other 51, Tanya.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
And thanks for being here and joining me from tour. So where are you guys right now?
So right now we're in Philadelphia having a day off, and I just finished having a lovely walk around the neighborhood, and it's a beautiful sunny day.
Excellent. Excellent. Sounds good. So this is obviously your first tour since the pandemic started. How has it been going? What's it been like to be back out on the road?
It's been great. Obviously there's a lot more security and attention being paid to, just masking up and keeping everybody socially distanced as much as possible. Everybody's got their bus bubbles. So whoever you're on the bus with, that's who you can take your mask off around, except for right on stage, obviously. But yeah, it's been a little different, but it's been a huge relief to get back to, doing what I actually know how to do.
So I got to ask, as a fan, who's in your bus bubble?
Okay, so Mike is on the bus with me, and then the rest is all crew.
Okay.
From various aspects of the organization, and it's just been great. Everybody's just getting along really well. We've got a couple of new people on the crew, and turns out they're really nice and super competent. So I am really happy about that.
That's awesome. So I'm wondering, the first show back you guys played as a full band, what was that like? What was that like to get together? What was that moment like when you went out on stage and there's people in the stands? Just what was that whole night like for you? Getting back in and being in front of people after such a long time out, and obviously all the uncertainty that's happening and around the pandemic and around being around people. So what were the first couple of shows or just that time to be back like?
It was a little tense, and I definitely had concern, especially for the audience. When I look out and I see people not masked, definitely I have emotion as far as that's concerned. It's kind of like a feeling of concern, especially since, a lot of the faces I recognize and know a little bit, tiny bits of their stories and stuff like that, and care about them, and want everybody to be safe. But it, as far as playing music, what a relief. I'm actually remembering now the first couple things that we did, we had 2 days of rehearsal on the actual stage at Bonnaroo, the actual grounds, not the festival itself was not going on. This was just, we were doing a one-off concert on the grounds of Bonnaroo. And we did 2 days of rehearsal. And I remember that first day back, I was just like, wow, this feels so great just to play music and to be around other people. And what a relief. But yeah, it's been odd.
I bet. So I was curious because, you've been a touring musician basically since you were my daughter's age and on and off and on, but almost full time. So I'm curious, what was it like for you personally, when that stopped completely, just stopped?
It was pretty terrifying. When we did the At the Beach concert series, I guess, how would you call that? It's kind of like a festival.
Yeah. Like a mini festival. Yeah.
Yeah. So on the flight there, we were all kind of joking about everything getting shut down and making all these kind of like dark jokes. And then it actually happened. It was pretty terrifying, especially for me. I quit school in the beginning of grade 9 and started my own record company and started touring full time. I started touring at 16. I did my first cross Canada tour, and then 17 I toured China and Australia. Australia under my own name, and China playing in this bizarre elevator music band that was just like, I can't even tell you how weird that whole experience was. But I've literally only ever done this. I have other skill sets. I can cook, I can garden, stuff like that. But as far as, being able to make any kind of decent income or anything like that, I would be so lost. And it really was kind of pretty scary for sure. But on the other hand, I was really grateful because I've got a toddler. And honestly, I was supposed to go out full time in 2020. And I don't know how I would have managed to make that happen. in all seriousness, I don't know how I would have managed to take care of my kid the way that I needed to and also be able to tour.
Right.
And that's just because of my own unique situation. I know lots of other people are able to make it happen. I'm not judging anybody else, but I just know for me, I can't picture how that could have gone any other way. So I was very grateful to be with my child, for sure.
Yeah, it's what one thing we had said, you know, my wife and I, we both have worked from home and working from home kind of indefinitely now. And, you know, our daughter was doing homeschool for the first couple months and then on and off. And right from the beginning, you know, my wife especially had said, like, as hard as this is, we're never going to get time like this as a family mm-hmm. together again. And kind of, you know, it's hard and we're lucky, but what a privilege and what a blessing to kind of have that time together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you, like you said, you've been a musician your whole life. You've been touring since you were 16. Has songwriting also been a part of your life as much as playing music and playing other people's music as well?
Well, it depends on how you define songwriting. If you define song as a piece of music with lyrics, I've only really started doing that in the last 7 years.
Okay.
Maybe a little longer than that. I'd written a few songs here and there, but never really put as much thought into it as I have really in the last, you know, 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. But I've been writing fiddle tunes for ages.
Okay.
I've written a lot of fiddle tunes. And actually what's really neat is I just found out that one of the tunes that I wrote called The Dregs of Birch, a while back, it was recorded by this absolutely world-class Irish band called Lunasa. And they did the most beautiful version of this tune. And I've come to find out in the last few months that it's becoming part of the jam session repertoire amongst Irish traditional music players, which is so cool.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it's that. I think that's about the coolest thing you could hope for as like a tune smith.
Right.
Is for it to become part of the general consciousness of people playing music.
Right. So what is, you know, in terms of writing, what is the difference between just writing a fiddle tune and, you know, a song with lyrics and kind of, I guess, how we would traditionally usually think of a song? What's the difference in the writing there?
So a tune is really its own instrumental entity. It doesn't, there's no hard and fast rules because there are fiddle tunes that have like little lyrics in them. You know, here and there, like there's a tune called like John Brown's Dream, where like you play the fiddle tune all the way through. And at the end, you go, John Brown's Dream, John Brown's Dream ain't never been told. And then you go back into playing the whole fiddle tune again. And that's the only lyrical part of it. But generally speaking, it's its own little universe of instrumental music. And then when you're writing a song, that's something that's got lyrics to it. And that's, I mean, I would say that that's the difference between the two. I mean, I'm sure there's people that could be more specific and maybe more articulate, but that's the way I think of it anyways.
So you've been this past year throughout 2021, you've been recording a new album. So first of all, congratulations. Super excited to listen to that and to hear that. Is this a fiddle tune record? Is this a song record? Is it a combination?
Well, first off, thanks on the congratulations. It's been a long time coming. I've made three fiddle records in my career. And this is the first time I've made a record that's all songs. Okay. There's one tune on there, but there's the rest is all songs. And all but four of them are written by me. And the other four are written by a friend of mine named Dan Frechette, who is this superb songwriter who should have been famous and was one of those people that got screwed over by the record companies back in the day where they could, you know, sign you and then decide they weren't going to release you and shelve your project. And legally, you're not allowed to make another record and release it for a decade. So it totally killed his career, despite the fact that he should have been as big as Tom Petty. Like, he's absolutely good enough in every single way. And just got screwed over and was not able to reach the legendary status that I believe that he should have. So I've always tried to champion his work and in the Ducks on every Ducks record, except for the one where I wasn't so much involved with that one. On every other Ducks record, we've got a Dan Frechette song on it, which is just the way it should be. Right. And hopefully we can use this record and get his name out there a little bit more and he can start getting some, a little bit more traction, because he certainly deserves it.
you mentioned earlier that over the last about 7 years ago when you started kind of writing more songs rather than tunes, what brought about that switch? How did that start?
Well, when the Ducks ended in 2008, 2009, I took 6 months to go back to Canada and I taught at a music school. And in that time, I started dialogue with Mary Gaucher, who's an amazing songwriter and someone who I had always respected and admired, known her since I was 19 years old. And we started working together. And I, after my 6 months, came and moved back to Nashville and started working with her. And we worked together for close to 3 years. And in that time, I was extremely fortunate in that I was able to accompany her at a lot of songwriting retreats and got to sit in on a lot of this really amazing education that was happening, watching people write songs and then edit them and sort of get a better idea of how this art form is really created. And that sort of opened up some things inside of my brain and they started just kind of working in the background there. And then when that relationship ended, I really had a little bit of time to process everything that had happened. And I started writing. And part of it was therapeutic. And then also part of it was just a natural development of what already was there. And I just didn't realize it until I started trying.
So the songwriting sessions that you were in those kind of retreat sessions, what are some of the lessons or some of the things that you learned that either stand out to you now or kind of you remember being kind of like a little epiphany, aha moment for you?
Well, one of the things I learned from being around Mary is just how much editing can go into writing a great song.
Okay.
You know, sometimes people write a song and that's it. You know, it comes to them in one moment and there's the song. But a lot of times you'll write something and you might work on it for years before you're really, truly happy with it. And I've had that with a few songs where you kind of have to live a little bit in order for something to make itself more clear to you.
So your songwriting process, I'm curious what that's like. I mean, do you start with words, a lyric? Do you start with a tune and then go from there? Do you have like an idea and just kind of play around with it? I know every song tends to be different, but is there kind of a process that you tended to use with these songs on this album more than others?
Yeah, I mean, so I'll get a little riff that'll play itself in my head and sometimes it'll be for weeks. And then I'll sit down and I'll sort of flesh it out musically a little bit more. And a lot of times I'll sort of make word sounds that aren't really words, but kind of feel right. Mm-hmm. And I'll play around with that. And sometimes I'll do that for weeks and that will just marinate in my brain and just start working itself out. And then every once in a while I'll get like a flash. Oh, that's supposed to be that word. Okay. Well, if that's supposed to be that word, then obviously, you know, we're talking about this. Okay. Well, this feels like this.
You know, like, right.
All right. So this, and it sort of reveals itself in stages. Of course, having said that, there's been times where songs have just come and they've been complete in and of themselves, but that's not generally the rule.
As you're kind of working on writing these songs, I mean, do you know, as you're working on these songs, that I'm going to put out an album? Like, I guess, are you thinking I'm going to do an album, so I'm writing songs for an album? Or does it go the other way? You get a collection of songs and say, hey, album.
It was more that I finally had a collection of songs that I felt like I could really stand behind.
Okay.
And also I was emotionally ready to take the risk of being so vulnerable.
Okay.
One thing I've realized over time is that, I don't know if you've ever heard of the work of Byron Katie. I don't want to get too off topic, but if you're aware of who Eckhart Tolle is, she's another person like that. And they know each other. It seems like they really enjoy each other's presence, but she has this workbook that you can, or this worksheet that you can work off of, and you find a thought, something that's causing you suffering, and you work through it. And I was doing this worksheet and it was this whole, like, I was feeling really down and you can do it against a person, but in this case, I was like, I'm going to write one on the music industry because, you know, I feel like I've been around for, you know, I've given this my all. I've been here for so long and I've worked so hard. And I felt like the music industry, you know, in quotations, right, is, you know, owes me something, or like, it's like that kind of like that grimy, ugly feeling of like, I deserve.
Oof, sure.
I'm just feeling like I should have had, you know, a bigger career, or I should have had this, and they should have given me a chance, and they should have bet on me. But the thing is with those worksheets, you have to turn it around. Once you write all that stuff and you question whether or not things are true and all that stuff, which is wonderful, because a lot of the times things that you think are true are not really true, right?
Right.
But you turn it around and it goes, well, I haven't really given myself a chance, and I've never really bet on myself. And in a way, that's very much true. You know, when I was a youngster putting out my solo records, I did invest in myself, but it was tough. I didn't like being the boss. I didn't like telling people what to do. I didn't feel like it was good for my friendships. And I just didn't feel like I had the support system around me to really take off the way that I needed to. And so when I got the opportunity to join the Ducks, you know, as a 17-year-old, when I got the offer, I jumped on it. I wanted to be a part of something, and I wanted to be on a team. And, you know, after that, I ended up just playing an accompanist role and helping other people achieve their dreams. And I've put a lot of energy into helping other people, but I haven't really invested in myself, and I haven't really bet on myself. And I had to really examine that and go, you know what, like, how can I expect anybody else to bet on me if I'm not betting on me? So that was a revelation. And that was sort of the beginning of this record, and going, you know what, I do have all these songs, and they're sitting here, and I love them, and I would love to have a band, and I would love to, you know, be a leader. And I feel like now I'm in a position where I can do that efficiently and compassionately.
Right.
Both are important, right?
Right. Is there a theme running through the songs on the album? I love the story of the album of betting on yourself. I love that. That's come up in so many of these interviews, and I love that so much. But is there any theme or themes to the music and to the songs on this album?
You know, there's songs about needing to get out of abusive relationships. There's songs about not waiting anymore and just taking a chance. There's a song about consumerism and how it's so empty, and just sort of looking out at the world and seeing how people are just so focused on stuff that doesn't seem to be serving them or humanity or the world as a whole. I don't know if I could sum it up in one particular theme.
Sure. It's easy for someone like me sitting on the outside to see, hey, she was home in a pandemic for a year and a half, unable to tour. That's got to influence art. That's got to influence what you're writing. Do you think it did?
No, because a lot of them harken back over the last, you know, 15 years, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've got songs that I wrote when I was in the Ducks on this record. And so it's sort of been a process of me just sort of finally having the confidence to pick my favorite ones and going, you know what, these are the ones I really want to do.
Yeah. So what's that been like for you, kind of as an artist and then as a performer, to take these songs that are older, kind of capturing kind of personal feelings or emotions or stuff that's in the past, and now revisiting them and recording them and playing them? So what's that been like?
That's a great question. You know, I would say the only song that really had really much of an emotional charge as far as any of that is concerned is I have a song about my father. My father passed away almost 5 years ago now. And I wrote the song quite a few years before he passed away. And I didn't have the guts to play it for anybody, really.
Okay.
But recording that particular song, I put it off. It was the last one we recorded because I was kind of almost embarrassed. I just didn't want to be, you know, too emotional or too sappy about things. And honestly, after I recorded it, I listened back to it and I was like, you know, things that as a writer you think are very direct and you think you're really saying something that people are going to be like, oh, they know what I'm saying. It's like, no, actually, this is pretty open to interpretation. Like, if you're coming at this not knowing my story or anything, this could mean so many different things. Right.
Have you experienced that before? And I'm always wondering, you know, with any kind of writing or a piece of art, really, is like the artist's intent or your story you're telling versus as a writer and as an artist versus how the audience or how an individual in the audience takes it, and kind of like that duality of meaning, right? Like what is the interpretations of the song? So have you ever had experienced anything like that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's the thing is if you get deep enough into your own experience, you actually end up tapping into the universal. Mm-hmm. Because when people are listening to a song and you're saying, I blah, 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 they're mm-hmm. not thinking, oh, Tanya, blah, 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 blah. They're thinking I. They're thinking right. themselves. They're putting themselves in that place and they're finding a way in which that is relevant to them in their life. And mm-hmm. it resonates with them or it doesn't, right?
Right.
But it really honestly is very much out of your hands how things are interpreted. And you just have to sort of hope that you're doing more good than harm.
What was the recording process for the album like?
So I had the privilege of recording at Paul DeFiglia's studio.
Nice.
And we really hadn't hung out since he stepped back from the band. And I have to say, it was just such a great experience. We just got along so well, despite our differences in approach. He's very much, him and the producer, Dominic John Davis, who plays with Jack White, they were both very much, and I was on board too. I was like, yes, let's record direct to tape. Let's go totally analog. This will be great. And literally the first note that we hit, the tape machine blew a bunch of fuses.
No
I don't know
way.
What, I don't know if it was my dad getting in there being like, this is not going to work for you. I'm stopping this right now. But it broke. And it broke so badly that it took weeks to get repaired. So we had to switch to Pro Tools.
Okay.
And it turned out that was the right way because Paul is very much, he's like a musician's musician in the sense that like, he wants to record what actually happened. Mm-hmm. And he wants that honesty and mm-hmm. integrity, because he's a person of integrity. And that's one of the things I love about him. I felt so comfortable and able to be vulnerable in that space. Mm-hmm. And I just knew I could trust him. And that was just huge. But what was funny is when it came to, for all of you guys out there who are not familiar with music editing and the process of recording nowadays, you know, maybe you are familiar with Photoshop. Well, mm-hmm. Pro Tools is kind of like the Photoshop of music. So you can record something in there and you can record multiple times and you can pick the best of everything.
Right.
And so anytime you're hearing something on the radio, pop music, anything like that, what they've done is they've basically made like a Frankenstein take of like your absolute best of everything. And that's how it ends up sounding so great. And then after that, they put it through a bunch of filters and tune it and sanitize it and do all sorts of fun things that I may or may not enjoy personally. But I am definitely more, or at least for this record, especially because I don't have a band, right?
Right.
I wasn't coming in with a band that was like, we know our material, we've been playing this for, you know, at least weeks, we're very familiar with it, we're going to come in and just, you know, hit a home run. It was more like, oh, nice to meet you for the first time, you know, Dom Billet, who's an amazing drummer, and, you know, and it was me and him and Paul. So it was me and Dominic and Paul. So we had two Dominics. Dominic John Davis is producing, but Dom Billet is playing drums.
Okay.
So Paul and Dom and I were all in the studio, and it was more of a matter of like getting the bones down and getting the foundation down and then building on that. Okay. And what was great about that is I was able to send the files to one of my longtime friends and my first ever bandmate, Adam Dobre, who's an amazing guitar player. And I was able to send him the files, and he was able to record them from his studio on Pender Island in Canada. Nice. Yeah. So it was great to have him involved. But I definitely am more of like an editor and, trying to get like the best, cause I've had these songs in my head for so long that I had a very specific idea of like, this is how it has to sound. And sure. these are the parts. And even on like the bass line, there was a few times where I was like, no, I need you to play these notes instead. Or, you know, I was very sort of specific. And so to be able to get in there and make the edits that I wanted, it wasn't the most fun for Paul, but he tolerated it. He was such a good sport about it. And turns out that him and Dominic and I are all big gardeners. So at the end, I got them both these really awesome Japanese gardening tools that are, I said, for ground editing. because I just was like, I'm so sorry that I made you sit there for hours picking through, does this vocal sound better or does this vocal sound better? I mean, like, if you don't want to be there doing that, there's nothing more annoying.
It's like the editing version of the eye doctor when you got to pick one or two, three or four, and they all look basically the same, and you're trying to figure out which lens to look, which answer you're supposed to give.
Exactly. That is a very good comparison.
So you've used the word vulnerable and vulnerability a few times in talking about your writing and talking about performance. And I've heard other interviews you've given in the past and that has come up. So is that an important part of this for you about being a musician and writing songs and performing, this idea of vulnerability?
Yeah, I think that there's great strength in being willing to be vulnerable. When you allow yourself, when you trust yourself enough to be vulnerable, you actually are letting yourself be a lot stronger. And I think if I can let myself be more vulnerable and trust the process a little bit better, I have the potential to actually help people. And that's sort of the point of all this, right? I mean,
right.
If we're not out here making things better for people, then what are we doing? So you've got to be giving something back. There's got to be something of tangible value that you can be offering. And I think, you know, letting your heart be seen is, you know, it's a tough step to take, but I think once you do it, it's not, you know, it makes things less scary in the whole world, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I ask all of my guests this, so I'll ask you, what's the best thing you've read lately?
Ooh. Well, you know, my mom's working on a book right now.
Actually, I did know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've actually been proofreading.
Oh, nice.
I've been proofreading her first novel.
That's awesome.
And I am so surprised. Like, my mom just picked up writing in the last few years, and she's always been a big reader.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize how, like, crazy my mom is. Like, her imagination, the twists and turns in this book. I mean, first of all, the writing is great. I was so surprised. Not that I didn't think she was a smart person and everything, but I've never known her as a writer.
Sure.
And reading this book, I am just astounded. I actually had to stop reading it the other day because I was crying so hard. I was like, Mom, why did you do this to me?
That's awesome. So when is her book coming out?
You know, I think it just got sent for printing. So I think awesome. It's going to be pretty soon. I'll put a big announcement up on my fan page on Facebook and on my website and stuff when it comes out, because I'm sure other people will be interested in checking it out too. But I'm really impressed with where she's going with all this. And she said she's already working on her third novel. So there's like another one that I haven't even read. I mean,
wow, that's impressive.
You know, it's interesting. We all have so many lives within our life. You know, there's these different eras and dramatically different things can happen within one lifetime. It's just amazing to see. So, I mean, I've definitely been enjoying reading my mom's book for sure. One book that I've read recently that I really enjoyed was Many Lives, Many Masters.
Okay.
By Dr. Brian Weiss, I think. And it's about people's past life memories, and it's written by a doctor, and I'm not going to say too much more, except for if people are interested, they should check it out for themselves and make their own decisions. But I found it absolutely fascinating.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll have a link to that in the show notes. I'll have a link to your fan pages, so when your mom's book comes out, they can get it. And when can people expect the record to come out?
Oh gosh, sometime next year. Okay. Where the mixing process is taking a really long time, because I have the absolute privilege of having Dana Nielsen be the nice. Engineer for this. And he is Rick Rubin's right-hand man.
Oh, very
and
nice.
I got to know him from making the Avett records. And right. He is just a phenomenal human being. I love his family. Obviously, I love the work that he does. And so, as you can imagine, you know, he's got his day job, which is kind of an important job. So, on his free time, you know, during his free time at home, he's working on this, but of course he's got a child as well. And his daughter this week got sent home because other kids in the class had COVID and were having to isolate. So, you know, when things are going to get mixed, I'm just staying open right at this point. And I'm just trying to trust that it's going to happen when it needs to happen. And I'm just trying to trust in the universe and how all things are going to unfold, but it doesn't look like it's going to be any time this year. That's okay. For sure.
Well, it's something to look forward to in 2022. So that'll be awesome.
Yeah, we might release a single or two in the interim just to get people excited. And
sure.
I've got two songs right now that I've got mixes of, and I got to tell you, it's so exciting.
Yeah, I bet.
Just the excellence, the people that have played on this record, and the way that people have really just put their heart in there and done such a beautiful job. I couldn't be more happy with everyone's work on it. I'm just thrilled.
Awesome. Well, we will look forward to that and look forward to seeing you on the road sometime in the next year. But Tanya, thanks so much for joining us this week. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Other 51. Show notes for this and all of our episodes can be found at sportsmediaguide.com by clicking on The Other 51 tab. If you like the show, please consider giving it a rating and a review, either at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help people find the show. Our theme music is by Ellie Moritz.